This is Sue Supriano for Rebel Radio, and my guest today is Stephen Dunifer, who is the founder of Free Radio Berkeley and has done many things with the movement, been very important force in the movement for micro-broadcasting throughout the world, really. And recently, he and Ron Sokolsky edited a book called Seizing the Airwaves, a Free Radio Handbook. And we want people to know about this. It even has all the how-tos of how you put a micro-broadcasting station together at the end of the book. The Micropower Broadcasting, a technical primer right at the end of the book. And it's articles by very many people. And Stephen, I want to welcome you and ask you to bring us up to date on what's happening with the micro-broadcasting movement and your case with that you're fighting it out with the FCC, and just fill us in.
All right, well, thank you. The free radio movement continues to grow. We're seeing a lot of evidence of that, and also the fact I think we're being taken much more as a serious force at this time, and particularly in the last year. The National Association of Broadcasters has trained their sights on us, seeing us as some grave threat, I guess, to their, whatever, bottom line. But I think it goes beyond that. I think it goes back to the real issues of controlling the public debate, of narrowing the spectrum, to a very confined one of response to, really critical issues, and the ignoring of many others. And I think really what's at the bottom of this is why, the FCC and the NAB, which is really, in many cases, the moving party in much of this. The real reason is that it's not really one of licensure. It's not really one of affecting the bottom line. It's really a control issue, I believe. I think it's really a problem that they see coming out, that people are not really satisfied with what they're hearing in the media, whether you're on the left or right. Part of the spectrum, it doesn't matter. There's not a serious discussion of many issues. The degree of public discourse is very narrowed. It's not like, my concept for free radio is in certain respects like the old idea of the Boston Commons, that not only do you have a right to speak, you have a right to be heard. And, unlike the Boston Commons where you could, be heard as far as you shouted, we have, micro-power broadcasting stations which can carry one's voice much further distance than one can shout, of course. And I think that's really the root of this, that they don't, that is the powers to be, do not really want unlimited freewheeling public discourse to exist in this country, because essentially it would be a serious threat to what would be termed by Noam Chomsky the he's discussed the whole idea of what they call a crisis in democracy. That is, that what passes for democracy in this country is nothing more than a state of consensus or perhaps detente between the ruling elite forces. And when they see the grassroots, that is, the average folk, start moving in an empowering fashion, then they start jumping up and down about a crisis in democracy. So really what we have witnessed over the last year has been quite a growth in this, both in terms of the attempt by the FCC, spurred on by the NAB, to try to shut down micro-broadcasters. Yet at the same time, this is encouraging more people to go on the air. Some people have been discouraged, but I think people who really have the vision and commitment to this are really not going to be deterred by these efforts. There are too many stations on the air for them to deal with right now. And with yet another recent court victory in November, I feel we have a very strong position. The FCC really has not been able to, in my opinion, get very much favorable public opinion in their court. Largely, for the most part, every response we've had has been extremely favorable, except from the NAB and the FCC. Numerous articles have appeared in various media, from the New York Times to USA Today to Philadelphia Inquirer and many more, and all of them make extremely favorable pieces from, you know, local weeklies all the way up to, you know, national and LA Times. So I think people are recognizing a real need for independent, free discourse in this country. And what we're doing, I think, really speaks to that need. People are feeling that, you know, the media is essentially intertwined, you know, with the corporate interest and the shadow puppets called the government, which are basically manipulated by the corporate interests. I think, you know, this, you know, P.J. O'Rourke's description of Congress as a parliament of whores is probably pretty correct. You know, they're all bought and paid for, basically. So really what we're looking for is really this is a fresh air of democracy, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's very interesting. I've been reading your book here, Seizing the Airwaves, a Free Radio Handbook, and I've learned a lot of things, actually, and I'm sure I'm more informed than the average person about radio. And just to read about the history and the changes that it's gone through and the whole licensing procedure. For those of I should explain in the beginning, I always forget to do this, that micro-broadcasting is basically stations that have, in the United States anyway, that are under 100 watts, because it's under 100 watts. That you have to have 100 watts or more to get a license from the FCC, and if you don't have a license, you're not supposed to be on the air. So it's one of these catch-22 deals, mm-hmm. Which keeps people who aren't rich, basically, and big corporations off the air. And now since the Telecommunications Act, it's very, very quickly mm-hmm. consolidating. I mean, the numbers which are in your book are really very astounding.
And those numbers are getting worse every day. We just, you know, learned that one of the last freeform FM stations to speak of, KPIG down in Freedom, California, which is a little south of Santa Cruz, really good station. I mean, in terms of just, you know, they were a commercial station, but they had a freeform format, and, you know, sort of wild and crazy bunch of folks. Well, they were bought a year ago, and they were told there were not going to be any changes. And it's just now been announced that they're going to at least a 50% classic rock format. I mean, you know, what, Aerosmith all the time or whatever. I mean, I mean, how many more classic rock format stations does this country need? I mean, it's like, it's really ridiculous. And I don't really compare what's going on in radio broadcasting and the consolidation. It's just like it's like if your nutritional intake was limited to the choice of, you know, four or five franchises like McDonald's or Wendy's or Nations or whatever. You know, none of these entities are going to really provide you with the real nutritional needs your body needs, nor are these radio stations going to provide you with the variety of programming that is really vital for a healthy society. And that's really the bottom line of all this. We're seeing this is an incredible amount of consolidation occurring, and it's getting worse every day. More and more stations are being bought up. It's going to be down to probably, I mean, if you go through various versions or various editions of Ben Bedikian's The Media Monopoly book, when it first started out, there were a lot more, and, you know, maybe 40, 50. Now it's dropping down to, you know, 12 or less mega corporations that are going to control the entire thing, and it's really providing no alternative for people.
Right. And they control all the media, not just television and radio, but all the videos and books, even novels, even. Maybe a lot of people know this, but I was really astounded to find out that radio stations were paid huge amounts of money. I had heard that before, but I'd never seen the figures. Paid huge amounts of money by the record companies to play only certain records. So I always think of that we don't have enough access to information, but I didn't realize how we didn't, you know, you didn't even stand a chance if you didn't stand a chance, really, if you weren't part of one of those companies that paid the money to the radio stations to play the records, the CDs these days.
Well, that's correct, and also the music that is being played only represents maybe 5 or 10% of all music that's being recorded in this country, and it doesn't include, of course, small labels. It doesn't include independent productions. All these things are very vital to a real vibrant, diverse mix in terms of a cultural, expression, artistic activities, and so forth. So we're really, they're really depriving the, society as a whole of a much, it's a very narrowed experience, and they're really depriving people of a much broader, fuller, richer, artistic, cultural process, really.
And what about the stations, the micro-broadcasting stations? I know one of the things that you have done, Stephen Dunifer, is create some very small, inexpensive transmitters, and I know you're always working on new designs. Bring us up to date about how easy it is to start a radio station, and tell us something about how many there are, if you know, and about the diversity of that movement.
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, we estimate at the low end, there's maybe anywhere from 400 stations up to maybe 1,000. We just don't know how many there are on the air. It's hard to say, really, somewhere in that range. And there's quite a diversity. I mean, you have community stations, you have some all music stuff. In Miami, is a virtual explosion, mostly music stations. I think there's like 15 to 20 stations on in Miami. There's quite a diverse mix all the way up to the Washington-Canadian border, where there's a small town that's running a station. They broadcast their high school football games and various community civic stuff. So, I mean, it really reflects the community that it's serving, being the voice for. Mm-hmm. And those voices are really fairly straightforward to put on the air. Unlike the FCC's regulatory structure, which places such an inordinately high hurdle one has to jump over in financial terms, that is, hundreds of thousands of dollars, a free radio station can be put on the air for a cost of maybe, an average cost of $1,500, $2,000 if you really splurge on audio equipment. But it's not a very big amount of money. From a technical point of view, we've tried to make the technology as simple and straightforward as possible for make it easy for people to use. And that's been one real goal. I mean, it's not a situation just be able to plug and play at this point, but we hope to be at that arrive somewhere around there later on in next year. But in the meantime, we keep simplifying the designs where the assembly requirements aren't as great. But one does need to have some basic electronic skills and some basic understanding of broadcast engineering practice to do it in a way that's reasonable. Mm-hmm. I've tried to, in the book, in the technical primer, give people an overview of what the requirements are, what to anticipate, what constitutes good broadcast engineering practice in terms of not interfering with other signals. All these sort of things are very important because we're really intent on being community voices, not a nuisance or a problem to other services.
Mm-hmm. The name of the book is Seizing the Airwaves, a Free Radio Handbook. It's edited by Ron Sokolsky and Stephen Dunifer. And Stephen Dunifer is my guest today here on Rebel Radio. So, Stephen, are you getting a lot of inquiries from, I know that you are, but I'd like you to comment on it, for people wanting to start new stations?
Yeah, all the time we get inquiries. So it's, email and voice and letters and so forth. So there's quite a lot of response to this. And I think that really clearly indicates that people feel they don't have a voice and they want to have a voice.
Do people really, can they do this without plugging in with the kind of transmitters that you've created? Is this something that people can just totally do on their own? Or are there other engineers, other places to get transmitters, or other places to get help besides through Free Radio Berkeley and you, Stephen Dunifer?
Well, there are some commercial people that make low-wattage broadcast transmitters. That's they're a little more expensive than what we offer, but they are available. Like, there's a commercial company called Bext, but you'll end up paying $1,500 for a 10-watt transmitter, mm-hmm. as opposed to $1,500 for the whole thing if you buy in kit form from us. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of companies like PanAxis and Progressive Concepts that offer kits, but sometimes they're a little more limited. But there's not that many, really, because it's not really been a much of a field for them, out really. But now with what we're doing, it's creating a much larger demand. I suppose that at some point, you know, more companies or groups of people will get involved in producing and making these available. And as I said, we hope to be able to go to the point some point this year of offering units that don't require any assembly whatsoever and just sort of be able to plug and play.
Mm-hmm. Well, that'll be great. Even I could start one then. It's back to this issue of the most of the press articles, and you have been in the press a lot lately. You're saying that they're sympathetic, and I even read on the email list, and there is an email list that this talks about free radio. Do you want to give that information, or we'll give it at the end if you folks stay tuned?
Right. Well, we're talking about email and internet. That's probably a good way to talk about some of the other projects that we're working on. The free radio movement and the internet, as far as I'm concerned, are working right now in a pretty good symbiotic relationship. We use the internet, World Wide Web, for our websites. We use the email for live communication and keeping in touch with each other across the world. And we're also now using a specific website, probably the only one of its kind right now, where we're storing essentially broadcast quality programs for distribution. People who are independent producers like you or other people are recording their programs and running them, you know, into a computer, where they're being digitally recorded, compressed into a file, and put up on the internet website for downloading and access by anyone else around the world. Basically, you would download the file, run it back through a computer system, through a sound card to a cassette machine, and then go on the air with it. Mm-hmm. And this allows us to bypass the satellite system, which is rather expensive and costly, and it goes from there, really. So we're really seeing a lot of a lot of things happening there in that respect. The radio site that we're using for the program exchange is radioforall.org. Our site is freeradio.org, and there's information on all these sites about what's going on.
And the Radio for All is, hopefully you've gotten your pens ready by this time to write this down, Radio 4, the number 4. It's radio4, with the number 4, all.org. And what's the free radio one again?
It's freeradio.org.
I guess that's pretty obvious. freeradio.org for the website. And there's a lot of information also about how you can start a radio station and what's going on in the free radio movement. And there have been several conferences. I know there's a one coming up on the East Coast, which probably will have happened by the time folks hear this particular radio show. And there's one scheduled for Las Vegas also. And when you think about these little teeny radio stations, it's just kind of like we've been hearing a lot about Cuba here since we're about to have a Cuba conference in Berkeley. But it's kind of like the United States being threatened by Cuba. These big stations and that should be threatened by these little small radio stations is kind of hard to understand because they're so dinky. But I'd like to, if you would expand on that and what's going on. I also heard that maybe the National Association of Broadcasters is changing their mind. What do you think?
I don't think the NAB is going to change its mind for a while, mm-hmm. Given their attitude. There is some shift maybe at the FCC, but I'm a little suspicious of that. It seems to be sort of good cop, bad cop kind of thing to me at this point. I don't trust him at all. I mean, bureaucrats speak with bifurcated tongue, you might say. As I said earlier, it's the reason I think they're bothered by us. It's not a really issue of bottom line or those sort of things. It's really a matter of who's controlling the public debate in this country. And, you know, I mean, it's they don't want the type of things that we're discussing and putting on the air made available to the average folk, you know, because people might start thinking about things, and then they might start taking action, which could be a problem. So it's, I mean, we're seeing this. I think right now it's a really pretty clear thing as far as I'm concerned. And we are having these conferences. There's one on the East Coast in Philadelphia, the 3rd, 4th, and 5th of April. Then we're having our own conference in Las Vegas, where we'll actually be confronting the NAB, who's having a convention there as well, on the 6th, 7th, and 8th of April, to show where the NAB is coming from. They are at a Tuesday luncheon on the 7th of April. They're inducting Rush Limbaugh into their Hall of Fame, Broadcasting Hall of Fame. And we're going to be there to commemorate the event in an appropriate manner, sort of Abbie Hoffman meets Hunter Thompson sort of scenario, I'm sure. But we'll also be there to have our own workshops and our own presentations and work out further strategies for micropower broadcasting, both on a national and international basis. Our international work is really going well. We've been sending transmitter packages and station packages down to Chiapas and Haiti in approximately the end of April, 1st of May time frame. We're going to be sending a four-person team into Haiti for 3 weeks to do teaching and training and helping set up more stations and hopefully getting them set up to do their own assembly and manufacturing of transmitters there. So we can just send boxes of parts over and let them do it there, and which would be much less expensive for them to do so. Mm-hmm. So plus we're getting work from other countries. We just sent a whole, you know, boxes of stuff to someone going to Africa who's going to put stations on there out in the bush with solar panels. So it's really a fast-growing movement. I'd love to see, you know, tens of thousands of small transmitters from, you know, the Arctic Circle to the Antarctic Circle and everywhere in between all the way around. If we're going to really, you know, be able to affect any change on this planet, we have to be able to, first of all, communicate, because if you can't communicate, you can't organize. And if you can't organize, you can't fight back. It's real clear.
Mm-hmm. Really, it sure is. And there's no reason that there couldn't be these little stations all over the world, because it's very doable, affordable, and we just have to get the information out, which is one of the things we're doing right now over the radio, actually. And I know that your case, there have been a lot of stations shut down with various different strategies in the last few months. Actually, it's started getting worse right after the judge ruled in your favor in Oakland here, saying that the FCC was wrong and Free Radio Berkeley had a right to exist and broadcast. And I know that Mildred Jones is in prison as we speak without going into a whole long thing. It's basically for doing radio with Napoleon Williams, her partner in Decatur, Illinois, Black Liberation Radio. We don't have time to go into it. But some pretty serious stuff is going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, particularly the case in Decatur is a clear example of suppression of free speech by local authorities, because not in this case with FCC, it was actually state authorities and local authorities who conducted these arrests and raids against Napoleon and his wife. And this is basically for speaking up, for having a voice in your community. I mean, Decatur's home to, you know, corporate criminals such as Archer Daniel Mendelins, Staley, Caterpillar, and so forth. So it's real clear what I think the deal was there, or it still continues to be. I mean, in the case of Tampa, Florida, there were 3 raids 1 week exactly after the court decision in November. SWAT team raids, you know, and the whole 9 yards. It was incredible. Something out of, you would expect out of, you know, you see these old posters, you know, of the Nazi colonel saying, "Seize that radio station." I mean, it's just something out of that whole milieu, really. And
I just want to say that, yeah, people don't think this happens in the United States. That's one of the things, and I'm sure you agree, that there's this illusion of freedom.
Well, it is an illusion. That's about all we've got, I think, is an illusion of it. I mean, if people will find out very differently when they go out on the street to exercise their constitutional rights. And people have to understand that the Bill of Rights is not really enumeration of your individual rights, but it's basically a circumscribed territory where the government can't go beyond. I mean, that these rights, you know, our right to free speech is an inalienable right. It cannot be broached or otherwise denied. And this is what we're all about as Free Radio, that we're saying we have an inalienable right as human beings to speak freely among ourselves, to have the type of discourse we want to have and the type of cultural and artistic exchange you want to have. And this is a right that cannot be taken away from us.
Mm-hmm. So when we even let ourselves think that the government has the ability to make these kinds of decisions, we're giving up something more basic.
Okay. Yeah. That's the whole point. That's why I object to the whole license process, because to become licensed is basically to enter into a commercial law contract with the government, and in doing so you give up these rights, basically. Mm-hmm. And I will never sign a piece of paper that abrogates my inalienable rights as a human being that have been not only set forth within the Bill of Rights, but within the International Declaration of Human Rights. And these are non-negotiable, totally non-negotiable. And, government will always try to limit and encroach on one's basic rights. And that's the purpose of the Bill of Rights, to limit what the government can and cannot do in respect to our individual and collective rights as human beings.
Would you like to go to the Supreme Court with your case, Stephen Dunifer?
Certainly, why not? It would certainly, I think it may end up there at some point, maybe 4 years from now, who knows? This has been going on for quite some time already. Mm-hmm. I'd welcome the opportunity to take this case all the way to the top.
Yeah. Well, it does affect all of us, whether we realize it or not. And we want to let people know about your recent book here. It just came on the market, Seizing the Airwaves, a Free Radio Handbook, edited by Ron Sokolsky and Stephen Dunifer. And Sokolsky spelled S-A-K-O-L-S-K-Y, because I guess that's how it'll be listed. Can this book be found all around? It's AK Press.
Right. It's from AK Press, and if people want to order a copy, they can call toll-free for AK Press. That number is 888, number 4, AK Press. And they can order one directly from the publisher if they can't find it locally.
Okay. It's 888, number 4, AK Press. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, hopefully people got that. And I want to thank you very, very much, Stephen Dunifer. And remind you, the name of the book is Seizing the Airwaves, a Free Radio Handbook. Thanks again, Stephen. My name's Sue Supriano.